It is 3:04 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. You heard the cuts from Danny Mack, Dan McLaughlin at FS Midwest. You heard from Paul Goldschmidt, who hit the game-winning Grand Slam. Game over, right, Ronge, when he hits that Grand Slam, and it's you just don't have to worry about anything.
I turned off the TV. Not like they're going to come close or anything to catching up with the Cardinals. Oh, my God, what almost happened?
Whew.
That was amazing what happened last night. That is the kind of hit that Paul Goldschmidt needed. I don't know if this carries him or puts him... I want to think that that was the moment he takes off for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. And maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, we'll look back and we'll say just that. He took off after that big slam in Pittsburgh to give them what was a crucial win. I hope that's the case. We can hope for it right now, but man, that was a big, big moment for him last night. Just hope it carries over into the next several weeks of the season.
And I know after the game, the manager, Mike Schilt, said that was a pretty gutty performance, and it had to be by Carlos Martinez because he didn't have his best stuff, and then he gets burned by the error. And a lot of pitchers, in fact, in the past, Carlos Martinez would have crumbled after the error, but he's able to get Diaz to bunt into the fielder's choice, and then the unbelievable play that you just heard, because it's Jose Martinez, it's even more unbelievable, and then Frazier flies out to end the game. But that throw by Jose Martinez, I know we should expect it because he's a Gold Glove quality outfielder, Ronge, but that was amazing, wasn't it?
That really was something. I was super impressed by what he did, and I was telling Stalter during the crossover that I thought for sure, and you're thinking like a third base coach is thinking in that moment, and sometimes they're going to be willing to take risks, and sometimes they're not, because you'd rather, a lot of times, be conservative. I got my guy at third base. I think we're still in pretty good position. I'm just going to let him go there, and then I'll assume one of my hitters after the fact is going to drive him in. But when you hit it out to a fielder who is not necessarily known as a guy who can field cleanly, get off a really good, clean throw, and get it online a lot of times, you're willing to take that chance. Mm-hmm. That was a good send. It was just a better throw. It was one of those plays where you're telling the right fielder, I'm going to make you get me out. I'm going to make you make a great play, make the catcher follow it up with a good play of his own and a good tag, and that's exactly what happened in that moment last night. It was a good send. It was just better defensive play by the Cardinals.
Well said. Chasen Shreve got the win, even though he allowed two runs on a couple of hits in one-third of an inning. And for the win, the Cardinals said thank you and DFA'd him so that they could bring back Mike Myers today.
Well, you know, you needed another lefty.
And the ERA...
Wait.
Wait. The ERA was at 9 for Shriver. So
they gave up. Maybe they gave up a little bit too quickly on him. I guess we'll.
Yeah.
You know. I guess we'll see. I don't really know. But Myers had been steady for them a lot of the times over the last year and a half. So I guess it's good to have him back.
Yep. The Cardinals were able to overcome a brief outing by Daniel Ponce de Leon, but they have too many of those recently.
Right.
They need to get 6 and 7 inning performances. You can't have your bullpen. You just can't have your bullpen throwing 7 innings.
Right.
It doesn't work for you.
On its own, last night, if you just look at the game for itself, forget about the context, forget about what's been going on and what's coming up, that was a great, great win for them. Awesome win. But there are implications for the next week or so. We're talking about a team that's in 17 straight days of not getting a day off. That bullpen's going to need a little bit of a breather here. Maybe Myers provides that in a way because he's coming up and he should be relatively fresh. So I guess that helps. But your bullpen is getting way too worked, and those starters are going to have to come up with some innings here very, very soon.
And tonight, you've got Dakota Hudson going. Hopefully, he can give you 7. And hopefully, the Cardinals can score some runs, because I would be shocked, I think you would too, if Carlos Martinez were to be available tonight, right?
I can't imagine he is.
And I can't imagine that Brebbia would be either. So I don't know.
No.
I just wonder who the closer will be tonight. Andrew Miller?
Maybe. I don't know. I guess that's who you go with. It's not going to be Myers.
No.
It's not going to be Webb.
You wouldn't think so.
No.
By the way, Brebbia did have 3 days of rest before last night and only threw 18 pitches, so maybe Brebbia would be your guy.
Yeah, you could probably bring him back in, I guess.
Yeah. So
if he only threw that much.
Meanwhile, the Cubbies lost. Cubbies allowed three runs in the eighth, three doubles for San Francisco. And the Cardinals are a game and a half out of first, and they are in the second wild card spot, and they're ahead of Milwaukee in the National League standings, in the National League Central, just a game and a half behind the Cubbies, and the Cubbies come to town this weekend.
So they're in a really good position. They could make some real movement here if they take care of their own business. But what you kind of mentioned there regarding the Cubs and what happened to them last night, and talking about this during the crossover with Stalter as well, what the Dodgers want. Mm-hmm. You're looking at a number of teams that want the same thing, and that is some back end of the bullpen relief help, just like the Cardinals need. They need some back end help right now. With Jordan Hicks not available for them, and Carlos Martinez looking as shaky as he does a lot of times, and I believe it's now four of his last five appearances he's given up something, that's not a good trend. But every other team in the National League and some teams in the American League, too, are looking for that bullpen help. So they're kind of in a tough position right now with a week and a half to go before the deadline.
And that's why San Diego apparently has put their closer on the market.
Mm-hmm.
Kirby Yates is one of, if not the best closer in baseball so far this year. So he's available. And for all of that talk that the Giants would make Will Smith available, even though Bumgarner might not be, they have such a good system and such a good bullpen at AAA. The Giants might move a guy. They'd certainly move Melanson, but they might move Will Smith too.
But we were talking about them yesterday and how they often act on sentiment. Well, they're two games out of a wild card spot right now. So are they going to operate as if they're sort of cashing in here? Because if they're honestly serious about making a playoff run, you're not giving up Will Smith. You need him. So it's about what do they think they are.
Right. And do they want to do it all? Because as we mentioned, it's for one game. It's for
right.
You might only get one game out of it. But I think they can afford to move some bullpen pieces because they have some good bullpen pieces available to them. It's just a matter of what you can get back. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and the Cardinals are winning again with a big thanks to their bullpen, but how long can they continue to pile up that workload? We'll dive into that next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. That's our Cardinal insider Mark Saxon from The Athletic earlier today on 101 ESPN. In the last full turn through the rotation, last five games, the Cardinal bullpen has pitched more innings than the starting rotation. The rotation has delivered 21 and two-thirds innings. The bullpen, 22 and a third. Wainwright, 3 1/3. Ponce de Leon, 3 innings. Both failed to get to the four-inning mark in their recent starts. And obviously, because he is the guy that has been the best for the Cardinals so far this year, Adam Wainwright has to be better.
He does have to be better, and he's going to have to go deep in a game. Mm-hmm. So you can't have these 4-5-run innings out of him. And you know what? As a starter this season, he has been overall pleasantly surprising. I did not think he would overall be as effective as he has. The problem is, he's really only been effective at home.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, when he's pitching on the road, it just hasn't worked out for him. And tonight, he's pitching on the road. So you have to hope that trend stops here and stops here quickly. You did mention the Cardinals and their relievers. Far too many innings this season. I think that we've talked about that a lot. The Cardinals have 345 and two-thirds innings thrown in the National League. That is third behind the Brewers, who have had their own relief issues, and the Giants as well. The Giants have thrown a ton of innings. The Cardinals can't keep living like this. And same thing goes for the Brewers. They can't keep relying on Hader and the like every single game, all of the time, to pitch multiple innings, because their starters can't go deep enough. It'll work for a while, but by the time you get to the end of next month, and certainly once you get to September, these guys are going to be gassed unless you get them some help.
And it's hard to find a fresh reliever at this time of year.
Right.
That's why we talked yesterday about the Dodgers having a quality 35-man unit that they're utilizing. And the Cardinals don't really have anybody on their 40-man that you say, okay, we'll go down to Memphis and get him. Helsley has had his troubles at the major league level. We just saw Chasen Shreve. Maybe, and hopefully, Mike Myers can provide some relief down there because he hasn't pitched in such a long time.
Well, and they're going to have to hope. And you know what? That does happen a lot of times where you'll call somebody up and you're not expecting much out of them, and they give you some pretty good work for a couple of months. That's the nature of being a reliever. So That's possible. The danger of it is, though, that when you're using somebody who is unproven or relatively unproven, there's so much uncertainty there. It can go the other way where it can really blow up in your face. So the Cardinals certainly would like to, I think, stabilize that a little bit. That's going to be very difficult to do because, as we've mentioned already, you've got a lot of teams that are looking for the same thing this time of year.
And one of the things that the Cardinals have done is really narrowed their focus. Yesterday, as Dan McLaughlin spoke to John Mozeliak on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, Mozeliak talked about what the Cardinals desire.
You know, as we enter the trading deadline, I think we would look to see if there was an upgrade on the left side of the bullpen to complement Miller, but not something that we feel like we have failed. It's just something that we are exploring. And so we'll just continue to look at ways to add depth to that. I think the key thing for us when you're looking at bullpen help right now would be to try to acquire people also with options so you have some flexibility, because we are getting to a point now where our hands are a bit tied in some areas. So trying to create a little flexibility would make sense.
Quality players with options are not typically available.
Correct. That's the problem we're going to run into here. And if they are available, guess who else wants them? You know, there are other teams. So now as an organization, you're going to, if you really want this season, you're going to have to be willing to outbid with assets to get that guy. I'm just not sure how aggressive the Cardinals are going to be here. So I do think they're going to acquire relief help before this is over, before we get to the 31st. I just don't think it's going to be the guy we're wanting.
How about getting a guy that is so good that you have no inclination to ever send him down? And maybe rent a guy. There are multiple left-handed rental relievers that are going to be available. Why not take that tack rather than say, and he didn't say we're insistent, that just what they would like to have. And like you said, everybody would like to have a controllable left-handed, a quality left-handed reliever. That's what they thought they had in Chase and Shreve. Those guys just aren't floating around.
No, and you might catch lightning in a bottle here with somebody who is, maybe it's a guy we're not even thinking of, whose name has not been floated out there, but could come over here and could help. Maybe it ends up being somebody from the 40-man roster, and maybe it's a suboptimal choice, but it's the guy they end up going with. I know they're probably not happy or all that happy with Tyler Webb, but he's a lefty. Andrew Miller has pitched a whole lot better lately than he did at the start of the season, so I'm sure they look at him and think, okay, we're pretty set there. He's doing about what we expected him to do when we signed him, but he needs a little bit of help too. He can't be the only guy out there.
And this all goes back to the lack of production out of the starting rotation, doesn't
it? Yes,
it
does.
They need a guy. Seems like the sensible thing for the Cardinals to be pursuing would be that elusive innings eater, the guy who can give you more than six innings, give you a quality start. How about that? Mm-hmm. Let's start there. Six innings and three earned runs or fewer every time he takes the mound.
So this is where the discussion gets interesting, or really interesting, I think, because when we've talked about, when BT's here and we talk about what the Cardinals need, for this team, what we've said is they need a top-of-the-line starter to add to this mix. Because right now, as you look at them, who gets the ball day one? Who gets the ball in the wild card game? Who gets the ball in game one of the division series? Whatever you end up playing in that first day, who's going to take the ball? You don't really know at this point. And maybe somebody emerges in the next couple of months, but a top-of-the-line starter who has been pitching like one doesn't exist on this team right now. So that is the discussion to have if you want this team to go deep in the playoffs. But if you just want this team to get to the playoffs, now you need somebody who can eat innings and keep you in ball games, which is a completely different kind of starter than what you and I and BT have been talking about the last few weeks.
Ken Rosenthal has a good piece up at The Athletic talking about the available and not available starting pitchers. All of a sudden, Cleveland's only three games behind Minnesota in the AL Central. Are they trading Bauer? No.
I don't know how you can.
I don't either.
How do you sell that to your fan base?
And to Terry Francona. I don't think you
exactly.
Do. And even if you have Kluber coming back, you're still probably going to be without Carrasco. Luke Clevinger has pitched well. Not Luke Clevinger.
Clevinger.
Yeah, he's one of our guys. Yeah. Danny Clevinger?
I think it's something like that. Yeah.
But you could pursue, and apparently San Diego is pursuing Noah Syndergaard. I don't know that he answers the cardinal question. Bumgarner appears to be off the table now. And like we keep saying, everybody that is in contention, Dodgers aside, is looking for a front-of-the-rotation guy.
All the Dodgers want is a back-end-of-the-bullpen guy now.
Yeah.
So that's one of the teams you're going to have to compete with if you're the Cardinals, and that's what you're looking for. So Cleveland is, not only are they three games back of the Twins, but they've got a three-game lead in the wild card race. They're two games up on the A's, who are the second wild card, and the first team out is Tampa, and they're a game back. Cleveland is one of those teams that if they keep what they've got, and they get some of their health back, you know, they get some of the players who are on the injured list, they get those guys back. Kluber, for example.
Right, and he's throwing.
Yeah, so he's coming back soon. That team, I would not want to mess with them at all if I'm a playoff team. I don't want to deal with the Cleveland Indians. Even if it's a one-game wild card, I don't want to deal with them. And if they make it past that wild card game or if they win the division, they're going to be a problem once they finally get to the playoffs. So I just don't see them trading from one of their positions of strength.
You've got Bauer, who's great. You've got Bieber, who's terrific. You've got Zach Plesac, who's pitched very well for them since coming up. And Mike Clevinger is a guy that can give you a lot of quality production, and then you'll get Kluber back. So they've got a lot of good things happening in Cleveland. So the point that I'm trying to make is we might be upset next week when the Cardinals don't come away with a starting pitcher, but there might not be many starting pitchers available. You might not say, well, why didn't they get Bumgarner? Well, Bumgarner might not get traded.
Right.
If you're going to complain about the Cardinals not getting a guy, make sure the guy got traded.
To somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that you were the team that missed out on him. And I think you're right. Two of the top-line starters that we would be looking at, Bumgarner being one of them and Bauer being the other, I don't see them going anywhere. Cleveland's only getting better right now, and they have an excellent chance at making the postseason. So that guy's staying on that roster. And for me, my issues with the Cardinals in not addressing the rotation, that's from the offseason. That's not now. Is a completely different situation.
How about a Ronj move now, then?
What is that?
Zach Greinke.
All right, well, how are you going to get him?
They want to take $35 million a year over the next 2 years, $70 million, $81 million over the next 3 years off of their books.
So
take the contract. That's how you get him. Take the contract.
Well, if that's how Arizona wants to roll and they're not even thinking about being serious about the playoffs, then yeah, trade him. But they're two games back of a wild card. I mean, what you have to wonder is how are they looking at themselves, just like the Giants?
Right. But as opposed to San Francisco and as opposed to St. Louis, Arizona does have to worry about money.
Yeah, they do.
And especially long-term, the next couple of years. So that's one of the reasons that they might want to move a guy like Greinke.
But for a team that's not too far removed from the playoffs, I wonder if they think, you know what, let's just give this another shot.
That could be.
I don't know how they're thinking internally.
No, they might want to compete, and it might be important for them to sell tickets for next year to go to the playoffs or at least contend for a playoff spot and have star players around. Next up in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, the Cardinals recently made some changes to their analytics department in hopes of gaining ground they felt they'd lost in recent years. So what is the current standard, and how do they get there? We're going to talk about that with Mike Petriello of MLB.com. He's next on 101 ESPN. With Chris Ronji, I'm Randy Carricker. It is the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Mike Petriello writes about StatCast for MLB.com. He's also the host of the StatCast podcast. And Mike is with us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN to talk a little bit about what's going on in baseball. Mike, great to have you with us. Thanks for taking some time today. How are you?
Absolutely, guys. I'm doing great.
Hey, I want to start with this because you have a piece up that hit at early this morning, St. Louis time, 20 players, 20 trade deadline predictions. And one of your predictions that I'm going to guarantee is going to come true is that the Cardinals get Tony Watson from the San Francisco Giants. Tony Watson would be a good fit here.
Yeah, I mean, if you guarantee it, then I'm...
Well, you wrote it, so I'm guaranteeing it, Mike.
Yeah, well, listen, sometimes they make it easy on us. You know, we saw John Mozeliak the other day specifically named a left-handed reliever as a guy they were going to go after, and they just DFA'd Chase Freed today. So I don't know if it's specifically going to be Watson. Maybe it'll be, you know, Jake Diekman from the Royals or someone like that, but it's a pretty safe bet that they are going to get somebody, and I don't think any of those guys are going to cost a great deal. So I am relatively confident in that, even if it's not specifically Tony Watson, they will have a lefty reliever by this time next week.
So then you don't think it'll matter much that the Cardinals are going to be competing with multiple teams who also want back-end help, like the Dodgers, for example. I'm sure the Cubs want it as well.
Well, I think that's true, but I think the difference here is that the Cardinals seem to be very specific about a left-handed reliever, and I'm not sure that's true for every other team. You know, like the Dodgers, they probably just want quality, capable relievers wherever they can get them, because they do have Julio Urias in the bullpen, and, you know, they don't necessarily trust anybody else after Kenley Jansen. I'm sure the Cubs might like a lefty reliever, but I don't think anybody is going to be so specific towards one, with the exception of the Houston Astros, who don't really have a lefty reliever to speak of at all. I think they will be the main competition for guys like Watson and guys like Diekman.
Mike Petrello from MLB.com with us on 101 ESPN. And Mike, I agree with you 100% about Madison Bumgarner, that he'll stay in San Francisco because of their recent surge and because of the personality of their front office. But man, around the country, there have been a lot of baseball fans dreaming about Madison Bumgarner being in their team's starting rotation.
Yeah, I think they're going to be disappointed. You know, this whole run from the Giants, I think I looked it up this morning, 17-4 in their last 21 games, and now just two games out of the wild card. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm sure it's fun for Giants fans. But I have to imagine that Farhan Zaidi, who got hired to run Giants baseball operations, is sort of pulling his hair out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is great. Obviously, you want your team to be in the race, and that's awesome and unexpected. But he was hired to really rebuild this organization. And I think they are going to do it without, quote unquote, tanking. Like, the Giants ownership would not allow for that. And so he's kind of got to thread the needle here. It's like, how do I make the remainder of the season interesting and exciting for the fans while also doing what's best for the season to come? Because I don't think he really thinks that this team is necessarily as good as they've played over the last few weeks. But what I think they'll do is I think they'll keep Bumgarner, because I think he's the biggest name and he's meant so much to the fan base. And I'm not sure they're going to get the offers that they might want, because I think his name value might outstrip his analytical value on teams. But he can still get some value back by trading from his strengths, which is the bullpen. So we mentioned Tony Watson. Will Smith, I think, is a great candidate to go. And then even if you keep Bumgarner, you could put a qualifying offer on him and get the draft pick back. Or, hey, maybe you just re-sign him. Maybe he loves being there so much he wants to stay, and you can build around him for the future. I think it's something of a win-win for them.
And I think it does go back, Mike, to that front office that made the emotional signings of people like Matt Cain and Brandon Crawford and Tim Lincecum, a couple of contracts for Lincecum. Here they are with Bruce Bochy, who led them to three world championships, set to retire. And I have to believe, I know Larry Bear a little bit, that there is a desire on the organization's part to not send Bruce Bochy out with a tank job.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think it's they're probably looking at this as, for lack of a better term, found money, you know, because for most of the season, it was like, listen, we've been one of the worst teams in baseball for about the last 2.5 years. We don't have a great deal of expectation it's going to be better. And then miraculously, it was better. Like, you couldn't have scripted this any better. And I don't think this is a Hollywood ending. I don't think they're going to go win a World Series and send Bochy off into the sunset like that. But they are going to have something to play for over the next couple weeks and maybe the next couple months. And if you looked at this team in May, that's more than you could have possibly hoped for.
Just like the Giants, the Diamondbacks are two games out of a wild card spot, and Zach Greinke's name has been floated out there, and he's been traded before, so it's not like it would be out of the ordinary for him. Do you think that it's likely they would move him, or do they see themselves as a team that has an opportunity here to win?
Yeah, they're in an interesting spot, because if you look at their schedule over the next week, it's pretty favorable. Yeah, they're playing the Orioles right now. I think they have Miami next. And listen, if you can't run the table on those two teams, then you aren't really proving you deserve to be in this conversation. Now, they're a 500 team, and they have played like a 500 team. And it's true that they're only, I think, two games out of the wild card, but they're still behind like five other teams in the wild card. So I do think they would trade Greinke. I think it's going to be a tough fit, both because of his no-trade clause and because of the contract he still has left. You know, he's 35. He's still pitching very well. I think the best fit would be the Phillies, who can eat the money. They've got so much payroll room. They desperately need a starting pitcher. It is true that the Phillies are on his no-trade clause, but I think a lot of people look at that as a concrete end of discussion, and it's really not. A lot of times it's just about leverage, like, okay, if I go to this team, you have to give me an extra year or give me a trade bonus or whatever. So I think that they would be very happy to trade him, and I think the Phillies would be desperate to have a guy like that.
there is no chance. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it just doesn't seem like there's any possible way the Indians trade away somebody so valuable like Trevor Bauer at this point, considering where they are.
No, and I think that's really about the health of their rotation. I think that if you had a situation where Corey Kluber was healthy and Carlos Carrasco was healthy, and obviously you've got Shane Bieber and Mike Clevenger, then you could probably get away with it. You know, you could probably make a really interesting trade where it's, you know, you move Bauer from a position of strength for a desperately needed, you know, big corner outfield bat, something like that. You know, we've seen teams buy and sell before. Last year, the Rays traded for Tommy Pham at the same time they're trading away Chris Archer. But I don't think Cleveland can count on that because, you know, Kluber is still working his way back. Carrasco is working his way back. You hope both of them are going to be available. You can't really count on it. So it's a huge risk for a team that is currently three games out of first and holding a wild card spot to move a guy like Bauer and not be sure what their rotation is going to look like behind Clevenger and Bieber. So I think they are thinking about it, but I don't think they'll actually do it until the winter. And then I do think they'll trade him.
We got the news last week. The Cardinals are making a change in their analytics department. And over the last 10 to 15 years, analytics is now so entrenched in the game. Every team has a department. Every team uses it to some extent. Some teams use it more than others. Where do the Cardinals rank in terms of their use of analytics versus other teams in baseball?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one that's very difficult to answer from the outside. You know, it's pretty easy to say a top three or something like the Astros, Yankees, Dodgers, maybe now Twins. And I won't embarrass the teams that are probably the bottom three, but they're down there. And I think the Cardinals are probably somewhere in the middle. And you know, what they have done is to commit to improve it, you know, because it's really difficult to look at teams like the Astros, Dodgers, Yankees, and say that, you know, the intelligent way they're thinking about things hasn't contributed to their success, because very clearly it has. And every team is trying to get to that level. You know, you've seen how quickly the Twins have turned around in large part because of new management there. You know, the Giants obviously just hired Zaidi. Half the front office guys from Houston seem to be working for other teams right now. So as far as the Cardinals go, you know, they're doing a good job. They're reorganizing the group because they hope to have more results. And, you know, a middle of the pack ranking isn't necessarily the maybe detriment that people think it is. You know, it's a fast moving industry. And everybody's trying to catch up, and they've made some really interesting hires. And I think they'll get there soon.
Hey, Mike, we have a couple more things. Number one, I love what we do. All of us as baseball fans have to love what MLB.com does with Baseball Savant, and it really gives us a window into how players are performing. And one guy that has alarmed us all year long is Matt Carpenter, who has a career-low exit velocity of 87.6. Previous to this year, his career-low was 88.6. His hard-hit percentage is only 34.3, which is a career-low. How alarmed should we be about Matt Carpenter's performance? Not just those numbers, but the other numbers that we're used to.
It's not a great sign. I mean, obviously, anytime a guy gets into his mid-30s, and I know he's had some injury concerns, you know, that works out as well. But, you know, I remember last year he got off to this really slow start. Everybody remembers that. And kind of famously now, the team analytics department told him, look, everything looks good. You know, you're still hitting the ball hard. You're making enough contact. Don't freak out. Just do what you're doing, and things will be fine. And obviously, they were. And it's not really the same thing this year. You know, as you said, the exit velocity is down. The launch angle is down. Strikeouts are up. The walks are down. All those things are trending in the wrong direction. And that's not to say that he can't turn it around, because certainly he has earned the respect of you know, the success over his career, to say that he's earned the chance. And he'll get that now that he's getting to be healthy again. But it's just a different situation. I can't look at this and say, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. The reasons for concern are real. You know, as you said, like, his hard hit rate is in the 27th percentile. And that means that about three quarters of the league is hitting it hard more often than he is. You know, that's pretty scary. So I don't know that I can look at this and say, oh, yeah, he's going to crush and lead the team for the next 2 months. He's got a lot to prove in a very different way than he did last year.
In talking about those StatCast numbers and last season, as you mentioned, people were saying, you know, he's going to come around eventually. He's hitting the ball hard. Is there somebody else on this team right now, offensively, I guess we'll stick with that, that maybe the results aren't true to what the StatCast numbers are, and a change in results is coming?
Oh, that is a good question, and it's the right question to ask, and it's also one that requires a bit more research than I have
okay.
on the spot here. But I can tell you that if you look at someone like Goldschmidt, for example, the way he's played over the last few weeks, it's better. It's still not great. But, to really answer that question, you kind of need to go a little bit more in depth. I can tell you that the guy on the team I have always liked the best from an offensive perspective is Jose Martinez. Those numbers have always really been favorable for him. And I've always just wished someone would give him 600 at-bats to prove it. I know he's not much of a defender, so there's that. But that's always the name I go to on this Cardinals team.
Mike, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Hopefully we can do this again.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
Thanks. Mike Petriello of MLB.com, StatCast writer for MLB.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Mike, P-E-T-R-I-E-L-L-O, Mike Petriello. Coming up in the fast lane, the Cardinals make another roster move today as they get ready to take on the Pirates, and Mr. Butt Fumble isn't going to play anymore.
What?
That's next on 101 ESPN. Playing the second of four in Pittsburgh tonight. Dakota Hudson going against Chris Archer. And the Cardinal lineup has Jose Martinez back in it. Edmund leading off at third base. Martinez in right. Goldie at first. O'Neill, Wieters, and DeYoung. Wonger, Munoz, and Hudson. The Cardinals will have a different look in their bullpen tonight. Mike Myers has been activated from the 60-day DL and given his walking papers today has been Chasen Shreve. He has been designated for assignment.
Well, so they're hoping that the fresh Myers, I guess, can eat innings if they need it. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, the starter is going to have to eat some innings tonight because of this stretch of baseball the Cardinals are currently in. He can't afford to get into the fourth inning and get knocked out and throw too many pitches, forcing him to be knocked out. He's going to have to go deep in this game tonight.
So Dakota has to go and pitch well. Meanwhile, the Cubs play the Giants again tonight. Last night, the Giants with three doubles and three runs in the eighth to knock off Chicago by a score of 5-4, getting the Cardinals to within a game and a half in the National League Central and giving the Cardinals the number two spot in the NL wildcard race.
Well, this National League is not really shaping up any differently. If you really think about it, you've got all these teams that have been bunched up together. Certainly the National League Central has been pretty much all year. But this extends into the rest of the league when it comes to the wild card. This whole thing is tight. It is really tight. You've got probably five teams. Let me go find the standings again. But I believe it's around five teams that are within a couple of games of each other, which means everybody's got an opportunity. Now, a lot of things are going to change here over the next several weeks. Some of these teams, it is smoke and mirrors. I don't really think the Diamondbacks are going to the playoffs again. I really don't think the Giants are going to the playoffs again. But for the time being, they are right there. And so now you've got, again, yes, it is the Giants, Diamondbacks, Brewers, Phils, Cards, and Nationals. Those are all teams that are within two games of each other for that wild card race, with the Rockies and Padres being five games out.
And the other games tonight, the Reds are at Milwaukee, Tanner Roark against Zach Davies, who's having a really good year for Milwaukee. And the Cubs are at the Giants, as we mentioned, you, Darvish, pitching against Madison Bumgarner in what could be, again, the last start as a Giant for Madison Bumgarner, although most people don't think it will be.
I'm leaning toward him sticking around in San Francisco.
Another left-hander celebrated a perfect game and his second no-hitter 10 years ago today. St. Louis and Mark Burley did it for the White Sox. You were there, right?
I was. I saw both of his no-hitters in person.
Pretty impressive. And a perfect game for Mark Burley.
The funny thing about it was he never really had the best stuff. And so if you ever thought ahead, who is likely to throw a no-hitter, he's not one of those guys you would say, oh, yeah, it's going to be Burley. But one of the things he did, well, he did multiple things right. His control was exceptional. He had a terrific changeup, and he worked very, very fast. If Burley was pitching a game, that thing was probably going to be over in 2 hours and 10 minutes. And I know there were at least a couple of times where a Burley game ended in under 2 hours. When you're working quickly, you're keeping hitters off balance. You wonder why pitchers don't do it more often.
I wonder.
It's amazing because you're not giving them time to think.
Right.
Just get it and throw it, and you're going to be effective if you do.
Remember how Big Poppy complained about how he had to keep both feet in the inside the batter's box because he said, I need to think. And if you don't give him time to think, you're better off. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You shouldn't have time to think. Get in there and do it, man.
Right. Do your job.
Get it, throw it. It's an advantage for you. And especially now with the rules the way they are, and umpires are supposed to keep hitters in the box, that's an even bigger advantage for pitchers. I'm not sure why more don't do it.
Sad news from football. Quarterback Mark Sanchez retiring after a 10-year NFL career. He's joining ESPN as a college football analyst. What do you think he'll do the best job of analyzing?
Quarterback sneak?
Yeah. That'll be the one.
That was that we were talking with Austin Huff in the office, mm-hmm. and all the stuff he did, as good of a college quarterback as he was, and you know, he didn't have a great career in the NFL, but he's going to go on to be an analyst. The thing he's going to be known for is butt fumble for the rest of his life. That'll be on his tombstone.
He quarterbacked the Jets to two AFC championship games.
Yeah, that too.
And the butt fumble is what he'll be known for.
It's amazing.
How about this? Adrian Peterson, who's made more than $100 million in his NFL career, according to his attorney, is in debt. He hasn't been able to pay off loans, a $5.2 million loan to a credit company that was taken out last year, and he defaulted within 5 months. And also, according to The Athletic, Peterson owes $6.6 million to D'Angelo Vehicle Sales, who claimed he had defaulted on his loan in the lawsuit that was filed in New York. So, and his lawyer said, quote, "The truth behind Adrian Peterson's current financial situation is more than is being reported at this time." He said, "Because of ongoing legal matters, I am unable to go into detail, but I will say this is yet another situation of an athlete trusting the wrong people and being taken advantage of by those he trusted."
Usually, and that's the thing that happens every time you hear of a guy who's made $80, $100 million, how they lost it all. You think, how in the world could you lose that much money? Well, when you get that much money, you do have people around you who sometimes you think are trustworthy, and they're like, "Look, you got to invest in this. You got to put your money in this, and it's going to go great." And they end up really screwing you over. That happens a lot of times. I'm not exactly sure that's what happened here with him exactly, but I would imagine it's possible. It's happened to a lot of players.
Every incoming NFL athlete or pro athlete should be required to watch that 30 for 30 episode broke.
Yep. Hell, Frank Thomas almost lost all of his.
Incredible.
He invested in some silly record company, and whoever was involved there kind of screwed him over, and Jerry had to bail him out.
Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yep.
Wow. How about that? And one other note for you from today's Hot Topics. Out of boxing, a Russian fighter that was fighting on ESPN on Friday night, junior welterweight Maxim Dadashev, died this morning as a result of brain injuries suffered during an 11th-round knockout loss to Sabrail Matias on Friday night at the MGM in Maryland. Dadashev was 28 years old, and you read more about the fight than I did, but apparently his trainer wanted to stop the fight earlier.
Yeah, his trainer, let's see, what is his name?
Buddy McGirt.
Buddy McGirt. And there's audio and video of it, of him going over to the corner after one of the rounds, and I believe it was right after 11, and he's like, I gotta stop this fight. I'm stopping this fight. Okay, I'm going to do this. And the dude's kind of saying no, but also not really responding to him. And so then eventually McGirt talks to the doctor and then turns around to the ref and says, okay, that's it. So he did say he wanted to do it after the 9th round, but it happened for another 2. And I don't know if you were going to mention Doc Gooden.
Oh, yeah. Another sad story.
My God, he needs help. He needs a lot of help. He was just arrested for DWI, and this was after, in June, he got arrested for cocaine possession again. So he was going down the wrong way of a one-way street in New York. He was pulled over and arrested again. So this is somebody who twice in 2 months now has had some substance issues. He needs a ton of help, and I hope he gets it.
Me too. Good guy. It's funny, and we had Daryl Strawberry. I'm sure a lot of St. Louisans ran into Daryl Strawberry when he lived here. And Dwight Gooden, when I would talk to those guys in the Mets clubhouse, the two guys that I liked on that team, and I hated that team, Hernandez, Backman, Howard Johnson, I hated that team. But the two guys I liked were Gooden and Strawberry.
That's cool to hear. I really despised Keith Hernandez.
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody did here.
At that point, yeah. And Gary Carter was always friendly and nice, the late, great Gary Carter. But it is a shame that those players have, former players, have run into the problems that they have run into. Those are your hot topics of the day here on 101 ESPN. Coming up, we've got a new fighter coming your way in the 4 o'clock fight. That's next on 101 ESPN.